Well, good morning. Thank you for joining us. Before we get started, we're required to read this disclaimer statement, but none of the presenters in this session report personal financial relationship with commercial interests relevant to this presentation during the past 12 months. So good morning. I'm Evelyn Kapler. I'm the Director of the Office of Adolescent Health at the United States Department of Health and Human Services. And it's my pleasure to welcome you here today to our session on Adolescent Health, Think, Act, Grow, or what we call TAG. We're thrilled to be collaborating with the American Public Health Association on this presentation, and we're so pleased to have the opportunity to be here today. We're deeply grateful for APHA's partnership and for the many contributions APHA has made to the development of TAG. And today's session is an exciting follow-on to a session we held last year at APHA's annual session in New Orleans. At that time, the Office of Adolescent Health was still in the planning stages of TAG, and so the session offered a sneak peek at what we're about to hear more about today. Last year, OAH was joined by the Acting Surgeon General, who told us about how TAG would build on important initiatives such as Healthy People 2020 to bring further attention to the opportunities to promote adolescent health. Before we go further, I want to remind all of you in the audience, if you're on social media, to use the following hashtags. Hashtag TAG42MIL and hashtag APHA15 during the presentation and afterwards. As I mentioned, we're grateful to the APHA, who's our partner in the development, launch, and dissemination of TAG, and to have the opportunity today to present a panel of public health leaders that are putting TAG into action in their states and local communities. Before we hear from our speakers, we'll hear some remarks from Regina Davis-Moss, the Associate Executive Director for Health Policy and Practice at the American Public Health Association, Rear Admiral Patrick O'Carroll from HHS's Region 10, and a bit more from me about TAG. So now I'd like to turn it over to Regina.
Well, good morning, everyone. On behalf of the American Public Health Association and my executive director, Dr. Georges Benjamin, I'd like to extend a warm welcome to Evelyn, Rear Admiral Patrick O'Carroll, our four distinguished guest speakers, and to all of you. Thank you for joining us today. It's an honor to be here with so many dedicated colleagues from around the country to learn more about what we can do to promote adolescent health and take advantage of those wonderful years for healthy growth and development. Most importantly, we're excited for this opportunity to shine the light on three outstanding examples of state and local efforts that are putting TAG into action for America's youth. And of course, APHA will continue to be committed to promoting and advocating for the programs, policies, and services that assist adolescents in becoming healthy and productive adults, as well as highlighting those strengths and assets that can be used to encourage them to adopt positive health behaviors. So it is my special honor to introduce Rear Admiral Patrick O'Carroll, Acting Deputy Assistant Secretary for Health for Science and Medicine at the Department of Health and Human Services and Regional Health Administrator for the United States Public Health Service Region 10, which includes Alaska, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington State. In addition to his current role in D.C., Dr. O'Carroll serves as Region 10's Principal Federal Public Health Physician and Scientist representing the Assistant Secretary of Health and HHS in this region. We know him best, however, for his interest in adolescent health and his leadership of efforts on the West Coast, especially to promote opportunities for prevention during the second decade of life. Dr. O'Carroll received his MD and MPH from Johns Hopkins University in 1983, served as an Epidemic Intelligence Service Officer with the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and led the research unit for the prevention of suicide and violence at CDC's National Center for Injury Prevention and Control. He also served as Associate Director for Health Informatics at CDC's Public Health Practice Program Office and developed and directed CDC's Health Alert Network Program. Dr. O'Carroll, thank you for your leadership and for being here with us today. It is an honor to have your involvement in this effort.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm sorry to hide in the corner like this, so I'm over here. I don't know why I stuck us over the corner like this, but the panel will be more centered for your neck viewing pleasure. It's really my honor to be here today. I'm really pleased to be able to be here. And in part, I'm representing Dr. Karen DeSalvo, who's the Acting Assistant Secretary for Health, who wanted to be here and couldn't because of a calendar conflict. So let me extend her welcome to you as well. How many here have been adolescents? So it's like a majority. many people talk about what a difficult age time of life that is, but I don't think it's any more challenging in some ways than any other time of life. It is, however, a time of unbelievable developmental change. You all know this very well. I'm preaching the converted. It's why you're in the room. You care about it. But I really came to realize this really in raising my own kids. I have two daughters who are now in their 20s. And I was just astonished at the incredible change between a little 10-year-old girl and a 20-year-old young woman and how much happens in there. You know, at age 10, of course, my children were eating what we fed them. They were going to soccer if we signed them up for it, you know, going to the schools that we picked for them and so forth. They were leading the lives that their parents laid out for them. At age 20, that's completely not true. They're eating the food they choose to eat. They're exercising or not, depending on how they've developed and what they've incorporated in their life. They've either experimented with illicit drugs or with tobacco or not, depending on the environments they're in, what their friends were doing, what the social situation was. They're driving responsibly or not, and so forth. There's all kinds of decisions that get made and get internalized in that decade. And I was struck by the contrast with how much more support we had for toddlers. And you know, if you think about adolescents, sometimes we describe them, if you meet people, you say, God, my kid is difficult. They never clean up after themselves. They only think about themselves and what they particularly want. They complain and they're in a bad mood. Half the time, I can't figure out why. This describes toddlers pretty well, if you think about it, right? They're messy. They don't tell you what they scream. You don't know why. You're trying to guess. They communicate very poorly. They don't seem to care what you think. They're just about themselves. But we never say, God, I'm just going to ignore my toddler for 5 years because I hear they grow out of it. But you hear people say that about adolescents. You know, forget about it. They'll, you know, at age 20, it's temporary insanity. And we sort of dismiss this age group. And I became very interested in the work that Evelyn and others have been doing in adolescent health, and probably many of you as well, because obviously there were lots of folks who realized that was not the right approach to take, and that we need to be very thoughtful and supportive of this age group as they move through a period of healthy development. The other thing that struck me is many people, a person on the street, if you say adolescent health, or there's a physician or a nurse or someone who cares about adolescent health, they imagine we're caring only about health during that decade. And they'll say, well, kids are pretty healthy in that decade. I mean, you have to worry about injuries and maybe mental health issues or even suicide attempts. But generally, they're not getting cancer. They're not getting heart disease at that age. They're pretty healthy. But what many people forget is the patterns of behavior, the decisions that are made in that age group, obviously put you on a trajectory for good or ill health for the rest of your life. So it's, again, to reiterate, in my mind and I'm sure yours, an incredibly important decade. Now, it also struck me that when I had little kids, there was basically a kind of a clear partnership between myself and my wife and our pediatrician and the nurses and others who supported the clinical care to guide us through this period. They gave us the schedule. They told us how often we had to visit. There were norms they could use. They told us about vaccinations. They guided us in nutrition, helped us with injury control, and so forth. Also, at the end of life, if you think about it, when many, many people, the majority of people, in fact, at the very end of life facing multiple chronic conditions, we're working really hard to have a good system to provide coordinated care, to start thinking about how to have care in the home, to preserve people's dignity and quality of life to the end, and so forth. And so there again, we have a healthcare system that's really the go-to place to help people at the end of life when they're dealing with healthcare issues. But in adolescence, part of the challenge is there are so many people who influence the development of children between the ages of, say, 0 and 20. So many different professionals, teachers, coaches, peers, television, Facebook, I mean, all kinds of things that influence the way kids grow. And it's not nearly as easy to say, this is the person we go to guide our adolescents through a healthy development. There are many, many people, and not least of which, of course, are parents. In fact, probably certainly the most important group are the parents of these kids. So I am here to say I'm so honored to be able to, and I'm going to be staying to listen more about it, to learn about Think, Act, Grow, because it's this kind of a project that allows people in every walk of life who influence and can influence kids in this age group to develop into healthy and happy young adults who are on the right path It's exactly the kind of project we need. It's not easy. Again, there are so many different players, and it can be challenging to work with adolescents who are in between two worlds. They're neither children nor adults. It's challenging for them, too. But all of us need to be there to support them. It's incredibly important. And I think the work that's going on in the Office of Adolescent Health, and in particular with Think Outgrow, is exactly the kind of work we need and the kind of partnership models that it supports. So thanks for this opportunity to share these comments with you, and I look forward to hearing from the panel. Thanks. Evelyn?
Thank you, Patrick. I'm a little shorter than he is, so I have to adjust the mic. Well, thank you, Patrick. Now I'd like to take a few minutes to share a little bit of background about the Office of Adolescent Health. The Office of Adolescent Health is located within the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health, which is in the Office of the Secretary at HHS. And this year, we're pleased to be celebrating our fifth year anniversary. The Office of Adolescent Health, although we were authorized back in 1992, we weren't actually funded until 2010. And our legislative mandate is broad. When it comes to adolescent health, we're tasked with coordinating activities within HHS that relate to disease prevention, health promotion, preventive health services, and health information and education with respect to the appropriate use of health services. This includes coordinating projects of research, including multidisciplinary projects on adolescent health. And within OASH, we're unique. We're unique in having broad authorities to design, support and evaluate programs, to monitor trends, and to train health providers. We also have a mandate to coordinate with similar activities in the private sector and to support projects and conduct research and disseminate information relating to preventive medicine, health promotion, and fitness. In support of all of this, the Office of Adolescent Health is tasked with developing a national plan to improve adolescent health. Thankfully, we know there are many plans already out there outlining multiple approaches to adolescent health, and so we have chosen to use our limited resources to pull together what's known about what works and to spur action in support of adolescent health. And TAG is a first step. As was said earlier, TAG is a national call to improve adolescent health. We know that teens are generally fairly healthy, yet there are many missed opportunities to promote adolescent health and to intervene promptly as issues emerge in adolescence and young adulthood. For this age group, many opportunities for prevention actually lie outside of the healthcare system. And we know that many teens and young adults tend to drift away from routine health care. And we know that this is particularly critical for those of you who work closely with young people day to day. As Patrick mentioned, we know the benefits of giving infants and young children a healthy start. And yet with adolescents and young adults, we tend to focus on the risks much more than on prevention, early intervention, or positive youth development. I have to say that in contrast, TAG is a comprehensive, strengths-based, positive youth development approach to adolescent health rather than a risk-based approach. I'm going to give you a brief overview of how TAG was developed, what's going on now, and how we can work together to move adolescent health forward. Then I'll turn it over to our distinguished panel, who will share what they're doing right now to promote adolescent health in their own communities. With TAG, our goal is to spur action across multiple groups of professionals and organizations and in communities that have a common interest in promoting adolescent health. Stakeholder engagement is a core tenet that drives all aspects of TAG and reflects our understanding that many determinants of adolescent health lie outside of the healthcare system. And the goals for TAG are to raise awareness about the importance of adolescent health, to engage stakeholders, to get adolescent health on the national agenda, and most importantly, to spur action. In talking about TAG, we think it's important to realize what TAG is not. TAG is not a new federal grant program. TAG is not a specific program or intervention. It's not a media or public health campaign, and it's not an effort that focuses exclusively on risky adolescent behavior or deficits. In developing TAG, we engaged a broad group of stakeholders, over 80 individuals who represented organizations from multiple sectors with experience and expertise in youth services. Together, we shaped the TAG framework, and on our website, you can learn more about the TAG stakeholder engagement process and see the list of organizations, experts, and federal partners that were involved. During the course of those conversations with groups of experts across sectors, participants agreed that in order for adolescents to be healthy and develop well, they needed five essentials. And none of these will surprise you in the audience. They need positive connections with supportive people, safe and secure places to live, learn, and play, access to high-quality, teen-friendly health care, opportunities to engage as learners, leaders, team members, and workers, and coordinated adolescent and family-centered services. Based on the five essentials, sector leaders developed research-based action steps tailored for different sectors, such as educators, social service providers, healthcare professionals, out-of-school and community groups, and others. The TAG action steps can range from having teen-friendly offices to providing leadership opportunities for young people. We then identified resources that can help reach each of these action steps. And all of the TAG resources are available online and organized in what we think is an easy-to-use way. If you click on the landing page for TAG, you can find more information either by clicking on the flash box or by going to OAH Initiatives on the main navigation and then clicking for TAG. And on our website, you'll find several free resources that you can download and use. The first is the TAG Playbook, which was distributed at the start of the session, and the second is the new TAG Toolkit, which includes social media resources, including sample tweets, Facebook and blog posts, and other resources, including banners that you can put on your own website, sample presentation slides, videos, and other digital and print materials. And the playbook provides background information on America's adolescents, outlines the five essentials, and provides practical action steps and resources for each youth-serving sector. And if you've already engaged in some of these action steps, the playbook can be a tool to foster collaboration with other stakeholders and community organizations. If you haven't yet tried some of these action steps, the playbook is a great way to jumpstart the process. And if you'd like more copies of the playbook, you can download it from the website, or you can place an order and we'll be happy to give you copies for your meetings and conferences. So we're really grateful for our panelists taking time out of their busy schedules to join us today to share what they're doing in their states and communities to promote adolescent health. Each of their stories provides inspiration to take action and describes other opportunities to make a real difference in the lives of adolescents. We've asked our speakers to do two things. One, to share why and how their organizations made adolescent health a priority, and two, how their work connects with TAG. We've also asked them to share their successes as well as their challenges as they've planned along the way. We'll take questions at the end of the session. I would ask that you jot down your questions, and after all of our panelists have presented, we'll entertain questions for our panelists. So at this point, I'm very pleased to introduce our panelists. Our first speaker is Audra Bishop. She is the Youth and Young Adult Unit Supervisor for Children, Youth, and Families Branch of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. There, she provides technical assistance and training on topics related to adolescent development and positive youth development. Currently, she's the work lead in building a comprehensive and coordinated system for young people across the state called Colorado 9 to 25. Our second speaker is Nkem Nwankwo. who is a youth advisor with the Colorado Department of Public Health, where he also provides consultation on topics related to adolescent development and positive youth development. And our third panelist is Susan Elder. And before joining public health, Suzanne directed advertising and design for a variety of clients, including, ironically, Big Tobacco. Around the time of the public debate about marketing to youth was gaining momentum, she overheard teenagers talking about cigarette brands, which ones were cool and which ones teens wanted to be associated with. And at that moment, two things became certain for Suzanne. Her work was influencing teen behavior, and her successful career in advertising was over. She then went back to school. She earned a graduate degree in health policy at the University of Chicago Harris School of Public Policy, and then joined the Chicago Department of Public Health, where she developed the city's agenda for adolescent health, designed innovative policy and programming solutions, and created provocative public awareness campaigns aimed at preventing sexually transmitted diseases and unintended pregnancy. Today, she directs the Partnerships to Improve Community Health initiative for the Cook County Department of Public Health, where she leads a team of energized public health professionals. And our final panelist is Sue Catchings. She's the Chief Executive Officer of Health Centers and Schools. In her tenure from 1994, that organization has almost doubled the number of school-based health centers. They successfully contract with the Louisiana Office of Public Health, and the Health Centers and Schools coordinates all health services across 90-plus school campuses and serves approximately 43,000 youth and children each year. She's working on the development of a regional school-based model linking school-based health centers and school nursing directly to the medical community. So please welcome our panelists, and we look forward to their presentations and your questions. Thank you so much. If you want to, I don't know if we have
a
mic.
Can you
hear us?
Oh, you might be better up there.
Okay, so of course in prep we took a bunch of notes and we wanted to fill your heads with every experience we had ever had in building a comprehensive coordinated youth system, and we have 15 minutes. So we're going to bounce back and forth, and this is going to be youth systems building in the fast lane. So I'll give you the first, prior to us identifying youth systems building as our maternal and child health priority in 2010, we had all these building blocks building up until that time. In 2000, our department decided to fund a youth advisory council made up of young people between ages of 13 and 19. And to be really honest, and this is before my time, so I'm translating other people's history, but they said the department gave approval for that to happen because they thought it would be a really good thing for young people. They didn't realize that it would be a really good thing for our department. So that was one of, and instead of fighting that battle, we just said, yeah, it will be really good for these young people. Let's fill their brains with public health and build these public health leaders, these future leaders, and we were really strategic in that moment. So for the last 15 years, we funded this Youth Advisory Council. And then in addition, another tipping point was my supervisor, Anne-Marie Braga, had come to the department, and she had an opportunity to go to a leadership training program. And a part of that leadership training program was to do a community service project that was going to be supported by our department. And so this was another time to be strategic. And there was the release of the Supplemental Journal of Public Health that was talked about positive youth development. And so at the same time she read this, she was in this leadership program and she had to do a project, so she came back to the office and said, guess what, I have to do a project and this is what I'm going to do it on. So although it didn't have anything, a whole bunch to do with her role, she made it her role. And so thus was born the Colorado Youth Development Team that was a public-private partnership in the state of Colorado. And the role of that group was to travel around the state holding community conversations with young people, their families, and youth-serving professionals to ask, what does PYD look like? What do you value it? What gets in the way of integrating this approach into your work? And then we released a report on what that is. So we took all of the literature, because those of you that know the term positive youth development, you know that you can Google it and you will come up with 10 million, maybe more, definitions of what that is. And so we had to figure out what that was going to be for Colorado so that we could have an aligned approach in how we talked to and with young people. And so thus became our focus. So then in 2009-10, we had to do our maternal and child health needs assessment. So as we were going through, and this is right about the time I was coming in, and prior to this work, I was a direct service professional, and so I knew nothing about youth systems building. And it was blown away when we were doing conversations with young people, and these young people, when they had to rank what their priorities were, they picked youth systems building as one of the top things. And I was like, what? I don't even know what that is. How do you know what that is? Because they were living it. They were living in a world where juvenile justice was not communicating with education. Education was not communicating with health, so on and so forth. And they were saying, you all have great intentions, but unfortunately, we're the ones that are being affected by your lack of communication and your lack of coordination and common approach. Then that's when I got it. And I was like, okay, I'm on board. Youth systems building, I'll figure it out. So we met with various community stakeholders. I think public health in general, we believe in community engagement, community being the end user specifically, and our team wholeheartedly believes in that approach, and so we did nothing without young people around the table from the beginning. At one point, and this is a lesson, or one piece of advice too, that now I'm skipping to the end of all the notes, was that when we noticed that young people were not there, because they go on off into the world, right, and do their own thing eventually, we said, okay, we can continue doing this work, being informed by what they had said, or we can stop. And I will tell you that stopping was not the idea or the decision that people were really excited about, because they were like, we're building momentum, we can't stop. But we said, if we don't stop, we're not doing it authentically. And if we want this to work, we have to do it authentically and make sure young people are around the table. So we stopped for about 3 to 4 months until we were able to build the capacity of the young people or of new leaders to help us make decisions and move us forward. And then through these conversations, after a couple of years of this priority being identified, we created what is now known as Colorado 9 to 25, which is a comprehensive system to ensure that all young people are safe, healthy, educated, connected, and contributing. It took about a year to identify those 5 goals. Between the ages of 9 to 25, so that all young people could reach their full potential. So now I'm going to leave it to NCHEM to talk about what Colorado 9 to 25 is, and then we'll talk more about lessons learned and recommendations that we have.
No, excuse me, I have a little cough. Can I turn this up too? Can you hear me? Good, good. Go back down again. Good. So, I've been just charged to talk to you about what CO925 is. And we're really similar to TAG in that we find ourselves describing ourselves as what we're not a lot of the times. Because when you talk about a comprehensive youth system, you find yourself speaking to several broad topics. So we like to speak to ourselves as opportunity for you to connect, as well as systems, and all those systems of excellence that interact with you to connect, utilizing an evidence-based approach, which we, as we've already spoken to, is positive youth development, to kind of make sure, to ensure that all youth in Colorado are reaching their full potential, as well as the adults, by reaching those goals of being safe, educated, connected, contributing, as well as physically and mentally healthy. And we do that uniquely as a system by integrating several strategies, which are mobilizing partnerships, sharing accountability, you know, building sustainable programs and systems and connections, which is the most important part, I would say. And that's just how we do our work. And as the specifics as of what we actually do, there are several things. But we have to kind of separate it out, because we can talk to our work as Colorado 925, and we can also speak to our work as CDPHE and our role within Colorado 925. Now, to make sure that our system worked, we had to kind of contract it out to a backbone, which is Civic Canopy. So for a long time, we were the ones acting as the backbone for the organization, but to make sure that it was truly authentic, we had to, you know, give up that control to make sure that all the partners at the table had felt like they had equitable voice. So in doing that, our roles kind of changed. So, Aja, would you want to kind of sing song with me as we
go ahead.
Speak to some of the things we do? So as a youth advisor, my role within CDPHE is kind of different, but it's kind of unique, and it's awesome.
I'm in supervisory, yes.
Yeah, she hits me. Right. I'm just joking. So as a youth advisor within CDPHE, we do several unique things in supporting the work that we do at CDPHE, as well as supporting the work of Colorado Next 25. Now, on Colorado Next 25, I serve as one of the co-chairs for the social media and action team, which kind of acts as a hub to store all the resources and the opportunities that we come across, just so youth have quick access to that via our website. And we also act as a communication hub as well for internal works that happen within CONN 25. And being co-chair of that, it's awesome because, you know, you get to connect with youth all around the state and you get to, like, support them in their own goals and what they want to achieve, as well as house youth as part of the support system to kind of carry out that work within CONN 25. That's just part of what I do. And then through CDPHE, I work to travel the state of Colorado to kind of garner feedback and recommendations for youth, to speak to some of the programs and practices and initiatives that the state creates, so that they are authentic and they have youth voice and they are relevant. More than anything, that they need to be relevant, because in some of the work that you do, you find, skipping to the end as well. Lessons learned. Make sure your work is relevant. Otherwise, you find it's ineffective, you know? So the way to make sure that the work is relevant is by connecting with youth, which is what I'm privileged to do. So I travel around, I meet with bright young people, some way younger than myself. I fall within the adolescent age as well. I know the beard kind of fools people, but I am young, or I try to be. So that is the work. You see that youth create excellent work. They create cost-effective solutions to a lot of the issues that we face, and they are the solutions to the plagues that they themselves have to deal with. So with all the disparities that they face, youth are the solutions. So it's fantastic to connect with them and have them kind of speak to the challenges that we think are inconquerable, and they just have quick fixes that amaze me sometimes. But I'm ranting now, so.
Yeah. So some of the other things that CDPHE did, and I apologize that I didn't mention this, so we were the convener when this was identified as an MCH priority, and at the same time the collective impact work approach from FSG had come out, and we were like, okay, I think this is what we're doing. And to what NCHEM was saying about being able to give people equitable voices, although we had all these people around the table, they would look to us as the experts to say, well, what do we need to do? So we would come, we'd have an agenda, we'd ask them for their feedback, and they'd be, I don't know, what do you guys think? And we're like, no, but we're asking you. And they said, but yeah, you guys have the time to do all this work and the research, so what do you think? And so we knew after meeting that we weren't going to be having productive conversations where their voice was embedded. So we hired a backbone organization, and then another partner, Kaiser Permanente, funded that backbone as well. We are back to being the sole funder. So one of the focus areas of CDPHE now is to support the backbone in securing long-term sustainable and diversified funding for the backbone organization. So that, for public health, but community members don't necessarily want to be a part of public health forever, especially when they don't see themselves, when it's not been made meaningful and relevant to them. And so when an outside entity owns this, in some sense, although the terms have been really confusing, of who owns it, it's really all of us. So one of our lessons learned is that people have to embed this work, so Colorado 9-25, into their own work. So my role at CDPHE, as Evelyn mentioned, is I am our state trainer on positive youth development. So I travel the state and talk to agencies about, let's create a common set of terms related to PYD, that this is not about young people. This is about the adults that serve young people. It's about changing our approach so that they can eventually get to the outcomes that we're looking for, but this isn't about changing young people. So getting people on the same page of that. And part of PYD is we'd really expect to walk the talk in all of our work. So we've hired young people as employees. That was a hurdle in and of itself. Our HR department said, you can't hire anybody under the age of 18. And we're like, and just because we were naive, we were like, why? And they said, I don't know. Well, you just can't. And so we kind of got a little suspicious, and we were like, okay, why? And then we ended up going to our state HR department for all state agencies and just asked the question of why, and they said, you absolutely can hire young people. Just when you put it out there, when you post the job, it can't look like age discrimination. So we had to say we highly encourage young people between the ages of 16 and 21 to apply. And so we have made this a sustainable practice in what we do, and CHEM holds office hours so that it's not just Colorado 9 to 25 that benefits and our youth system, but also any program within our state health department and or local health agencies can benefit from his recommendations or him connecting them with other young people. So I think that, I'm trying to think of what else, and now we're all over the place, but one of our other big roles in Colorado 9 to 25 now is to be the reminder, we're in this big transition, is to be the reminder of what are we working towards. Because when you bring a collective group of people together, everybody, ideas start being generated. And we're like, what about this? And what about this? And so we've had to be the person to say, remind the backbone to be the group that says, let's look back, sorry, at the action plan. Let's go back to see what was our original vision? What do we want for young people? What do young people want for young people around the state? And how can we get there? So we're constantly having to bring it back home to say, okay, what's good? And how can we move forward in that? Encouraging young people to be at the table, be at every table in decision making. So we kind of create the processes by which to engage young people as well. That's a role that we're seeing. So we've created a continuum for community engagement. So what does that look like? I'm going to ask you a question. How many of you have heard of Roger Hart's ladder in regards to youth engagement? So some of you, yeah. So one of the things that we have personally in our state had a hard time with that visual is that it implies that there's a hierarchy. In if you do this engagement, it's better than if you do this form of engagement that is beyond manipulation and tokenism. And so we really want to demonstrate that youth engagement happens on a spectrum. There's a time and a place for when we want to engage young people, or we should always be engaging young people, but how we do that, if you want a lot of youth voice, shared partnership is really hard to get to, right? Because it takes a lot of time, capacity building, and we incentivize everything, so we pay all of our young people when they participate. And so we move more towards consultation. And then we have processes in place. We have a youth advisor model for when we hire young people as employees. So that's really our role, is keep moving the needle forward with engaging young people, promoting PYD, and ensuring that the work is actually happening. Do you want to speak to the legislation really quick?
Yes. So in Colorado, we were legislated to kind of create a youth system for Colorado through legislation, and we found we have no minutes left, but I'll speak to this topic really quickly, or try to be brief. So we just coordinated with the legislative system and with a lot of state and local partners to kind of develop this system, which was already in place, but to bring all the ideas and recommendations to the table, we utilize youth voice, as well as the executives at the table from different state partners, as well as local and nonprofits, to create this wonderful system that we've already been implementing, but now Colorado recognizes it. And we were looking to get monies for regional work, just so we can have regional hubs, and it's not just situated in the Denver metro area, which is kind of like our big city, which is not really big compared to Chicago, but that's what we're working on right now. And just one more thing I wanted to speak to with the hiring youth advisors, it began at CDPHE, but because of the successes, we've seen that other state and local partners are now hiring youth, and one of the best part of my job is that I get to help orient those youth and bring them up to speed on the table that they're going to be sitting on, so that we can all be successful together. But thank you for your time.
Hi, everyone. My name is Suzanne Elder. I was formerly with the City of Chicago, where this work was done. I'm presenting on their behalf. I'm currently with the Cook County Department of Public Health, where we're hoping to incorporate some of the principles and lessons learned from our work in Chicago. I wanted to start with two steps back from where you guys are. You did some amazing work, honestly. In Chicago, we started earlier in the process. We convened a group of health, policy, and education experts to try to get our arms around the issue of adolescent health within the context of public health. These are some of the groups and organizations that we pulled together to start the dialogue. And we did this because we knew that we needed to establish an agenda that would inform our work, that would elevate the visibility of adolescent health, and also to focus the efforts of all this very sort of these diverse disciplines, right, that were convened around this table. This group was called the Adolescent Health Access Committee. It's still, I believe, going on. It's done some remarkable work, mostly pulling together youth advisors. That's not going to work. One moment of technical assistance. Ah, got it. Lovely. Thank you. So this committee worked for about a year together, primarily with youth advisors at the core. You know, the adults were facilitating and supportive, but at the core were youth advisors, and created the city's first action plan for healthy adolescents. It became a core part of the city's public health agenda overall, and it set out 40 measurable goals and strategies for achieving them. And at the time we did this, it was very forward-thinking, right? We saw long timelines to achieve some of the things that we set out in our vision. And today I wanted to share with you some of the things that we did succeed at actually doing in a very short period of time. In particular, some of the policy successes that youth drove with the department are remarkable. With the Chicago Public Schools, sexual health education policy was improved dramatically. The district, CPS, is the third largest school district in the country, and they passed the first comprehensive, medically accurate, age-appropriate policy throughout the district. We went from having 20 minutes of sex ed in fifth grade to having specific topics, time, teacher training at all levels. And it was aligned with national standards as well. It was a pretty remarkable achievement. The state followed up, not quite as aggressively, and provided a new mandate for schools that were already teaching sex ed. It's optional at the state level. But for those schools that are teaching sex ed, they now too have to make sure that it's comprehensive, age-appropriate, medically accurate, etc. These were two really strong policy responses that were driven by youth, for youth. There's several others that I think really mark the brilliance of youth if we're patient and we slow down long enough to listen. These four policy changes in Illinois were first identified by youth, they were championed by youth, the drafts, the policy briefs were written by youth. They were central to all of this work. In the last two general sessions, these four things were accomplished. We amended the Illinois Public Aid Code to ensure that private information about sensitive health services would not be inadvertently disclosed, so that teenagers who sought either mental health treatment or reproductive health services wouldn't instantly out themselves as they moved out into self-acquisition of health care. There was this funny intersection, right? So under ACA and the expansion of Medicaid, we have private providers entering public space, and they brought their systems with them. So where it used to be, Medicaid would never send out an EOB, we suddenly had providers sending out EOBs. And it was the youth who raised their hands and said, whoa, 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 whoa. And oddly enough, the adults were slow on the uptake. But fortunately, they were persistent and they won. We repealed a section of the Illinois Communicable Disease Act. Again, this was first identified by a young man in a school here in Illinois, where public health departments were required to notify school principals about the status and presence of a student with HIV. Can you imagine? I'm looking at the faces, and you're all going, what? Yeah, oddly enough, and it took years and an amazing amount of effort. I mean, it became the cause célèbre of many of our youth-serving organizations and many of our healthcare organizations. But the impetus for this was first brought forward by a very brave young man. We amended the Illinois Liquor Control Act so that we provided lifeline, or what's called medical amnesty, for youth who report alcohol-related emergencies. Oddly enough, in Illinois, we had this kind of protection when narcotic-related emergencies were being reported, but somehow we lost the the alcohol piece, which was much more relevant to young people, at least in terms of a population health basis. And we also amended the Illinois State Administrative Code to include vaccination as a preventative health service. And by defining it as such, minors are now allowed to self-consent for HPV. So where there was a barrier, where there was an access issue, we now have the ability for young people to self-consent. Every single one of these policy achievements was made possible by youth. We were the people who were running after the wisdom of these young people. So, and this is the point I think was for me the most important piece of my work that I had the pleasure of really sort of gonking over time, is that they were more than just the recipient of services. If we were smart about it and we really included them in the work, they were the authors, they were the advisors, they were the leaders. They were the ones who were identifying the policy issues before we could ever see them, because they were living them. They were also particularly adept at identifying issues and bringing awareness forward amongst their peer groups. And I must tell you, I shamelessly exploited that piece, and I recommend you do too. And also, they are wonderful about articulating the issue in the very human, real way that was so influential amongst policymakers. You know, like, nobody wants to hear from me again, I swear. When I can go down to Springfield and jump up and down, but it's like this. But when you have a passionate, informed author, a young person who's authored this legislation, it stops the clock. So one of the reasons they're so good at, and frankly better than all of us put together, is that they're natural design thinkers. They start with a place of yes, right? They don't think about how we can't do things. They think about how we can do things, and of course we can do things, and why wouldn't we do things? So they don't start with the problem parameters. They start with a solution. And there's a kind of brilliance about that, which is very much part of a designer's toolkit or an advertiser's toolkit. And so their thinking there is actually way ahead of the curve. And so what we were able to do in bringing together all of these very different groups, education, juvenile justice, design, data, coding, is that we find these overlaps, right, where we could make incremental, sometimes, innovations. We would put policy pieces together with business cases, and the business piece together with the technology. And you'll see this in some of the work that the students brought forward. Now, I think some of you may have seen this before. This is basically the triad of design thinking, and everybody wants to go for that super sweet spot, right? The one right in the middle. And that's really rare space. That's occupied by Google or Apple or whatever. And people think, well, you know, if you don't get to the sweet spot, you haven't really accomplished much. And I'm here to tell you that's really not true. There's a remarkable amount of goodness and forward work that happens in the overlap. So shoot for the, you know, becoming the, you know, the exception. But also know that in those incremental gains, there's a lot of good being done. So one of the things I'd often talk about at Chicago, both with my staff, and I had the pleasure and the honor of amazing interns who supported this work from the School of Public Health here in Chicago. And the thing that we wanted to always impress upon stakeholders who were interested in adolescent health but not super deeply connected is that they were not a problem, right? Their behavior is not a problem. They're doing things differently and they're thinking about things differently, but that deviance is not necessarily a problem. And in fact, it's probably an asset that you want to figure out how to connect with. And that's what we did. I'll tell you a short story. This isn't the young man in question, this is a stock photo, because I obviously didn't want to disclose his identity. But there was a very enterprising young man at one of our high schools who stole all the condoms out of the health center. And he was found later on the street selling them to his friends and neighbors. And the school called hysterical, very, very angry, and said, "We're so sorry, Suzanne, we'll never let this happen again." And I said, "Oh, no, 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 we're going to make this happen all the time." So what we did was we branded him. You know, of course, we made him a teen health agent. And we took that idea larger and gave it out for schools to replicate and make their own. Where obviously he was doing a way better job than we were. We were getting no condoms out. He was just nailing it. So we also, you know, spoke in the language of the youth. For example, this on the bottom here where it says control and hold, you guys have seen the fold-out for the condom instructions. It looks like a, I don't know who's reading that when that moment arrives, but it's not teenagers. So we put it sort of in the meme language and made it much more simple with a higher probability, we hope, of actually being used. I know I have just a few minutes left, so I'm going to sort of split through this pretty quickly, and if any of this piques your interest, I'm happy to talk to you about it later. We engaged youth also in developing mobile health applications, and not just the typical wayfinding pieces, but delivering relevant, real information that mattered to youth. And we found that out by actually working with them for almost a year to really test out these ideas. So this this mobile app is also part of a project that's going forward right now. We continue to work with Serve Marketing, our creative partner up in Milwaukee. Does amazing work for social causes, particularly those revolving around youth. We also developed programming. We integrated a public health challenge into a college curriculum at Columbia University in their information design and product design sections. And so near peers were designing solutions for other students. This shows a couple of early sketches and some CAD drawings of condom dispensers that were actually produced. They're now in 35 high schools in Chicago, and a second order was placed, and by the time it's done, more than half of the high schools in the city of Chicago will have dispensers that were designed by youth for youth. The other thing we did was we switched up the public conversation, right? In partnership with Serve Marketing, our very generous partner, we were able to adapt a seven-year-old campaign and make it new again. We made it relevant for Chicago. It challenged stereotypes. It really didn't test well with adults. In fact, they hated it. But teens were intrigued. They loved it. They thought it was kind of ooey. And in the end, we found out there was just this amazing bubbling conversation about what would be different if men got pregnant. So it addressed the power piece. It couldn't have worked out better. Part of it was timing. Part of it was luck. But we really had a resonant message at the right time and in the right place. And we earned more than 1 billion impressions worldwide. We did interviews in Japan and Germany and New Zealand, and it just went everywhere. And it really elevated the whole question and the issue of teen pregnancy and STI prevention amongst teens. So what's in the works now? Our youth groups are still going. And even though I'm at Cook County, I'm still engaged with the youth and we're still doing this work. It's my passion, so it's not something I'm leaving behind. They're working on a campaign right now called Chicago Wears Condoms. It started first at Columbia College, where some of the information design students came up with this. And they put... So I loved it, of course. I thought it was fabulous. We actually ended up earning a protest and a major campaign of epic proportions that required us to pull this. It had never been published, actually, and it had no hope of becoming published given the reaction of some groups. So we took the building out of the condom, and then we just we put the condom on a building. Yeah, organized protests against me really don't typically work. So a couple of thoughts. You know, I think this is my job. Cultivate, convene, champion. Cultivate, convene, champion, over and over again. And cultivating ideas, definitely. The story of our enterprising team made that case very clearly. We convene partners who thought differently. We didn't get a lot of, you know, same speak going in the room. And we championed a tolerance for risk and failure. I could spend 3 hours showing you everything that didn't work. And it was part of the process, and it was valuable. So simple lessons learned for me, and I think maybe hopefully applicable to some, is ideas are not enough, right? They're a great starting point, but you eventually have to be able to execute or develop the team that can. Know your audience, and it's not you. The things that we did in Chicago that were effective really displeased most adults.
solutions also really almost always already exist if you know where to look for them. And typically your roadmap is going to be youth. It's not going to be you or your colleagues. It's going to be the young people themselves. And I can't underscore this particular piece enough, or more than enough, is that you cannot and you should not ever use youth in some sort of sticker way. Like, we had them look at it. No, they can build it, they can write it, they can promote it, and they can pass it in the State House. They are more capable than all of us, really, about their own needs and desires and what needs to occur. So really do trust them, listen to their voices, and you'll do great work. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here today with you all, and basically I have lived the history that you've heard about and run the program that I'm running since 1994. So I want to tell you a little story about living in a very red state and then how you work with your leaders to make sure that you get what you need for the children at that point in time. And I'll end in the same place that every one of these individuals have, because it's really about engaging youth and making sure that their voices get heard. So I don't know how many of you all realize this, but in the 80s, back in ancient history, we realized that we had a problem. We had gone from dying from disease to dying from our behaviors, largely related to tobacco, smoking, and nutrition, tobacco, and our lack of exercise. And this was a real problem. And so we have continued to look at what's going on in our country and realize that we had to change behavior. School health centers came into being in the late 80s to address that very issue. Started with funding from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to communities. Louisiana was one of those states that got two health centers back in 1987. What is so unique is in the 6 years that followed, the state became more and more interested because adolescents were a largely underserved population and still are today if you look at what's going on. So from those meager two, we actually now have 65 school-based health centers geographically dispersed across the state of Louisiana. How did we do that? Well, in 1995, the National Alliance was formed. Now it was the National Assembly. The Alliance was formed, and we came back and we formed our group. And we decided that one of the things we needed to do was to get the state of Louisiana to fund school-based health centers. And what happened was, in 1996, we requested $2.5 million in the Louisiana budget. And lo and behold, even though we went through an incredible floor fight in both the House of Representatives and our Senate, we were successful in securing this funding. That began this engine that through advocacy now, all of our Louisiana legislators want to have a school-based health center in their district because they have realized that we are doing two things at once, and I cannot emphasize this enough to all of you in this room. Our mission is very simply stated. We keep kids healthy so they can stay in school and learn. Because you have to remember, the one place that kids have to be in this country is in schools. So what evolved in Baton Rouge a little bit further down the road in 2004, the school system actually outsourced the school nurse program to us. That was unheard of. Instead of caring for 5,000 children through now 7 school-based health centers in Baton Rouge, we now are taking care of about 45,000 children stretched out across 90 different buildings through a school nurse program. We are practicing essentially population health because we are touching a majority of those children each year through various and sundry programs that are run by school nurses and the school-based health centers. But at the end of the day, we've added even more preventive health services in Baton Rouge because we want to keep everybody healthy. It's how you determine what you can do, and then how do you build the partnerships to make it happen. So, a little story about what we're doing in Baton Rouge today. In 2008, we were the first entity that did school-based influenza immunizations across all 90 schools in Louisiana. We have continued that, but the partnership would not exist if the school system had said, yes, we do want our kids immunized because we know what it looks like when a quarter of a high school campus is out because they have the flu. So from that meager beginning of letting them understand what happens on their campuses, they now understand that we are protecting both the very young and the very old. And we immunize somewhere around 20% of those students annually. The goal is 40%, but that's one of the things we do. We also know that we have got to communicate with the students themselves. In fact, the most recent thing that we've added to our very comprehensive program, which includes not just primary preventive services that include physical health and mental health, but also includes the school nurse program, some oral health services, and vision care services, is we are now hosting a student alliance council. Let me tell you that it's exactly the story that you've heard from the other presenters. These young people, we went to every public high school in the state, in Baton Rouge. There are 10 of them, and we said we want a 9th and a 10th grader off of every campus. We have a very generous funder who funds this entire project, and they in turn, these young people have stipends that we pay them, and yes, you can do that. And so those young people help us design programs that then get carried out on their campuses. But it's not all about what we want. We invite them to think about what is it that you would like to do because you are the experts. So the experts are now telling us that we have a big problem with stress and with kids that are really freaking out because of all of the things that are going on in their lives, both in their public lives when they're at school, but in their private lives that no one knows about. Do we have enough mental health services? Of course not. I don't think we ever will. However, Louisiana has done one thing that I think is really interesting. Every one of our public health regions in Louisiana has convened a group of stakeholders. It was a y'all come kind of invitation, but the group of people that gathered really and truly understood the lack of mental health services in our state. What has happened in every public health region in Louisiana, we now have mental health as its number one or number two priority. That has got to catch the attention of our stakeholders. We have got to see us move more to prevention. Oh, by the way, I'm one of those people who I was trained by the American Medical Association in risk assessment. It's not a bad thing to do, but let me tell you what I think school health centers have as an opportunity. Our opportunity is if we can do statistically significant numbers of risk assessments and understand the behavior on every campus where we have a school-based health center, then I can take what I know about those students and generalize it into the rest of the population. So what drives what we do? It's what we know is going on with students in across all of our campuses because it will begin to generalize, and everything we learn from those risk assessments helps us develop the health promotion activities that need to be done, but not in isolation of the teenagers. They have to be at the table. They have to be able to say, that's not going to work, this is going to work. So it comes from them. We spend time developing them as leaders. These are children, some of them struggle in school. Quite frankly, we have some kids that are probably out there practicing some pretty unhealthy behaviors themselves. But every time they get into this group, they see themselves as an advocate. They see themselves as someone who can take what they learn from, not me, from others, and then use that information to perhaps live a healthy life. So it's all about how you build what you want. If you're thinking about doing school-based health centers, I have one very piece of valuable information for you. And this has come because I believe that our adolescent population has to be served in a patient-centered medical home model. It has to have mental health services, it has to have primary care services, and hopefully in the not distant future, nutritional services, because we got a huge problem that this country can't afford. We are not going to write the check around obesity and what's going on with kids. But what I want to tell all of you who have even an inkling that you might want to get into a school-based health center is this. Initially, when we started back in the 90s, we put the health centers in the schools. So you literally had to enter the school building to get to the services. We've rethought that based on our knowledge, and what we have done now is we have put them on the outside of the schools, attached to the building. So what do? We have two sites in Baton Rouge that are open year-round. They are there during the holidays. They are there from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. They have different hours, and they're serving youth with an integrated primary care and mental health model. You must go down the road to build the infrastructure that begins to get where you want to be. I would also share with you that in my dream of dreams, which I hope will happen in the next 3 to 5 years before I retire, we are going to have school-based health centers. And right next door to that, we're going to have a vision center so that we can do eye care, because that's a huge problem for kids. We have some crazy rules about if a kid breaks the glass, their glasses, they can only be replaced one time. So what am I supposed to do? Let this child not have another pair of glasses? That's got to be stopped. So right next door to that is going to be a dental office so that they can get primary preventive oral health care. In East Baton Rouge Parish Public School System, 11% of those 43,000 children have some kind of chronic disease, most predominantly asthma. But the ever-increasing number of diabetics, kids with seizure disorder, we have several sickle cell patients, and kids that are hypersensitive to some kind of either food or insect venom are on every campus. What I can say to you is that you must go down the road of addressing all of that. The greatest thing that we're doing happened a few years ago. We left from being a standalone 501c3, and we became part of a large health system in our city. The hospital is called Our Lady of the Lake Children's Hospital. I am a member of the faculty of the pediatric residency program that the lake, that's what we call it, regenerated in Baton Rouge. All of a sudden now, our future looms bright. We have more subspecialists in Baton Rouge than I'd ever dreamed we would ever see. What's happening, though, is we are working directly with these physicians to design a school asthma management program going on the campus of the school. That's matched by another asthma management program that goes on in the hospital, and all of that is being linked up. So we are getting both horizontal integration and we're getting vertical integration, and those are kinds of systems that are going to be able to take care of children. I also want to mention that the Student Alliance Council is becoming a bigger part of what we do. They actually make decisions on who we hire. Yeah, they're in the interviews. And I am sitting in an interview maybe, but I really want to hear them talk. And whatever they say is what I do, because I know that they've seen something that I might have missed. I can only say that it's been, the work that we do is rewarding, and it's also frustrating. You must always remember who your friends are. You must always know who your enemies are. Choose your words carefully. Be sure that you understand the field in which you are playing. Sometimes we can't do the things that we need to do for young people because of state law and other kinds of challenges. That doesn't mean that I don't advocate. It means that there are other people who are saying what I can't say. I never, ever want you to forget that the road down this road of serving adolescents is all about advocacy. It's all about telling their story and making sure that you can take that story and show how you are working not with them, but for them. You must be able to deliver those services that they need in some kind of way. And so we seek those efforts all of the time in Baton Rouge. Sometimes we're not successful, but a lot of times we are. Thank you.
Well, I think I asked you to jot down your questions when we began, so if we have some questions for our panelists, please feel free to raise your hand, stand up. Why don't we start over here? And we had another question on the other end of the room.
I have a question for Savannah. You mentioned that your youth were involved with the Medicaid DOE's voter change. Could you explain a little bit how you got the youth, like what you did and how you supported them in doing that role?
Well, first, I just find a particular youth question here. When a graduate student in turn, but none of us within that sort of cohort, right? That is one of our targets. And she brought the sword because she observed that there was a shift under ACA and the managed care disease and how that was changing. And the students brought it was a particular issue. And she said, I think I want to make a connection, something that you want to support as a part of the school, and you can make that arrangement.
Patrick, I believe you had a question?
Yeah, first, congrats to all of you for working with us. It's really amazing, exciting, and encouraging. One question for you, Sue, on panels of graduates you've been there decades of working on school based on this. So I was struck, particularly at the end of your talk, that I think when people think of school based health centers, we'll often think of the services that are delivered there, one that's broad or other services. But you actually talk also about policy change. Also, in reference to your comments of smoking and e-cigarettes and lot to do with the environment. And it seems to me school based health centers are really not in the position to help influence policy. So can you tell me how you do that? Or how does a person who runs the school based health center advocate for excise tax for cigarettes or does not have so much fast food that it's only people at school and that sort of thing?
A little
bit
difficult to hear.
Oh.
So, if you could summarize the question, maybe
so
we could.
So,
maybe coming up here because we can't move the mic down.
So the question is, how do youth become part of your advocacy networks, and how do they themselves speak on behalf of their generation? And the health centers, what's the connection? So in order to choose our Student Alliance Council members in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, please understand that our own team members nominated them. And we told them what we were looking for. We are looking for young people who are not going to be the leaders on campuses, the traditional leaders, but these are kids who really understand healthcare because they're using our services. They're diabetics, they're seizure disordered, they have some kind of mental health concern. So all of a sudden we have a group of young people who understand that they share some commonality because they have some kind of medical concern. But what we do is we focus on, number one, developing them as speakers, but number two, we also teach them advocacy skills and we help them work in the community. So they are connecting to their own elected local officials, state officials, and they go to the Louisiana legislature with us to talk to officials, to get an understanding of how government works, because I don't think they understand. We have been doing this now for years in Louisiana. That's how we ended up escalating the state dollars to almost $7 million. It's because we had youth advocates. But more importantly, it's about the school-based health centers, but it's all youth. The students that are in schools where we don't have health centers realize that they can access those services also. And they also partner with their full-time nurse that's on that campus. So they begin to do things that we would have never thought of. They are thinking of it. We've let them drive the train. So it's about training them. It's about letting them be their own advocates. It's about connecting them to people. We always are thinking about ways, how do we bring in the people I call the movers and the shakers to come sit and listen with these young people in a very creative way. Another thing that we do, and you all may not know this forum that we use, it's called a Fishbowl Focus Group. We have a facilitator who is talking to the youth and asking questions. The youth are facing the adults that are in the audience, and oh, by the way, those are adults. Those adults are CEOs of the health system. They're physicians. They run private companies. These are people who really are connected and can make things happen. But the interesting thing that happens is they can't talk during a fishbowl focus group. They have to listen. They must listen to what these young people are saying and hear them clearly. I encourage you to use this technique. I can tell you for a fact, the CEO of Our Lady of the Lake Regional Medical Center, after hearing the Student Alliance Council members in a fishbowl focus group, went home and engaged his own two daughters in some conversations. Because he told me that. So I can't speak enough about letting them be the voice, but letting their voices be heard. And the way that we do it, or one of the ways we do it, is to tie the hands and the mouths of all the leaders. So you gotta listen.
Question over here.
Yep. I have two questions. The first question is, how have you handled conflicting advice from young people? I know the young people who work with some people say, oh, this is a thing, well, we need to go that way, and somebody else says the complete opposite. So I'm wondering how you guys have handled those kinds of conflicts among your youth. And then the second, I can't remember who said, but maybe all of you said, you know, some of the efforts heard of there or of the parents or adults, and I'm wondering if you have any strategy to engage parents, well, have youth talk to their parents or other parents, so we can get parents on board. Like, young people are in families and systems, so I don't think it's always okay to just disregard what the adults are saying. So those are my two questions, conflict and parents.
And I'm just going to put it in the speaker so hopefully everybody hears. The first question is, how do you handle conflicts and advice from young people? And the other is, how do you engage adults who may not be open to what young people are saying?
I'll start. So with the conflicts, so specifically with our Youth Advisory Council, because we have, similar to what I've heard, young people with very diverse experiences. So when I first came on, we had young people who were very like-minded young people, the stereotypical Youth Advisory Council members, which is so nice to hear that there are different councils all over the place that are really making sure that they're diversified. And we just tell the people who are coming to present, you are going to hear a lot of different feedback. You know, we have young people from around the state who have rural experience and come from much more conservative backgrounds, and vice versa. And we make sure to create an environment that allows those young people to have, you know, one young woman says, we shouldn't be handing out condoms, we shouldn't be doing this, and then it's our job to make sure that from a public health perspective we're educating, but that her voice is heard, because her voice is not just one voice, there are many voices that represent her voice. And so with conflicts, we just say, okay, here you go, now you guys have to figure it out, and we try and create a relationship with the people that are getting feedback to be able to implement that feedback or integrate that feedback and then come back and say, this is what we've done, what do you think? And then they usually get an earful of information, and we try to then create this constant cycle of, you know, whether it's quality improvement or whatnot, so that their feedback is integrated on an ongoing basis. And then in regards to adults, when from a training standpoint, I would go out and train communities on PYD and realizing, you know, when they would say, we've heard engaging young people is really important, we want to do that. And so I'd give them a training on youth engagement, and then 3 months later when I'd call back to check in and say, how's it going? They'd say, yeah, those kids aren't showing up. I'm like, well, number one, you just called them kids. And that's probably a big barrier right there, because that's how you're seeing them, other than their youth and young adults, or however your population actually wants to be referred to. And so we started training them on adolescent development, helping adults, and be parents as well, understand where their young people are coming from in general, from a developmental perspective, to give them that lens to be able to interact effectively with them from a PYD, with a PYD approach. So that's how we are navigating those conversations in Colorado.
And just to support some of the stuff that Audra is saying, and this mic does not like me. With youth, when you have conflicting advice, I would say have them, just as Audra said, deal with the conflicts themselves. And you have to understand that these youths come from different backgrounds, so they're speaking to their community needs. So when you have them create a shared message, you can then diversify how they speak on it. And then they can go into their different local communities, and then further their work that way. But just because you have conflicting input doesn't necessarily mean that they're saying different things, that you're saying in different ways. So you might have to consider that sometimes. And engaging adults, I'll just say, prepare the youth to advocate for themselves, because parents care about their youth health. It's just, again, they're on different pages, because a lot of time parents see youth as, oh, I was there, and so I know what you've been going through. But the needs might be the same, but the way that the youth are interacting with them and the way the youth are dealing with them are different. So adults really have to kind of understand where the youth are and where they're coming from. So just teach the youth how to advocate for themselves and give them the information they need to kind of speak to their needs.
Well, like with all good things, unfortunately, we're up against the noon hour. And I know that our presenters are here. I would invite you, if they're able to spend a few extra minutes, to come and ask your questions of them. At this point, what I would like to do is thank our panelists, for their presentations, and I would like to acknowledge the team within the Office of Adolescent Health that's been working on TAG, and invite Susan Maloney, our Communications Director, to share some additional information with you about the resources that are available to you through TAG. I think she and her team have done an excellent job in developing, collating, and making these resources available, and I think you'll find them extremely useful. So thank you to our panelists, and this is Susan Maloney.
Thank you, Evelyn, and thank you, panelists. It's wonderful to hear what we think about and hear about and hear it how TAG actually does get put into action, and there's so much wonderful work that's already going on, so I hope all of you have gotten some great ideas, as I have, and I thank you. I also want to make sure we thank the American Public Health Association for helping us host and organize a session. It's really been a privilege to work within an association where I have been a member for a number of years, and we're thrilled that we were on the front page of the Nation's Health in September for TAG. So if you have not read that article, we have a couple of copies of the paper in the back, and you can go online too and read the article. APHA is not the only national organization that we're working with from our office, and some of them are listed here: the Annie E. Casey Foundation, the Child Welfare League, Grantmakers in Health, the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners, the National Network of State Adolescent Health Coordinators, and in our own layer of government, the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, Nutrition, also the Society for Adolescent Medicine, Health and Medicine, and also the Society for Research in Adolescence. These are some of them. There are about 35 national organizations that in the last month have put information about TAG on their websites and have helped push them out. And is this? It worked. Look at that. I also want to make sure that we would really invite all of you to help spread the word and take advantage of the materials and resources that we've developed. Take a look at the website if you have not yet done so. I'll give you the URL for that on the next slide. Check out the playbook. You can order bulk quantities from us. It's hard for us to ship small quantities, so please, you know, if you could plan ahead and please, if there are other colleagues you'd like to give a hard copy, take them and, you know, don't leave them here in Chicago. If you can fit a few in your luggage and you know people who'd like to see them, go online. When you join TAG, you're going to get the updates that we start to send out. One of the things that we're going to be adding, or may currently be on the website, are at least one-page descriptions of each of the programs that you heard about today, so you'll be able to see that information. Within your own work environment, I hope that you'll encourage people to look at the TAG action steps, think about what you're doing and what more you can do to improve adolescent health. We're also inviting any organization or entity or person to blog. Starting in the month of November, we have a toolkit that if you signed up on the flip chart, or the chart, what are those things called? Clipboard. The clipboard. We'll send you a copy of the toolkit. It's also posted now on the website. Ask questions, stay in touch, and use the social media tools that are available to you to help reach some of America's 42 million adolescents. The state of West Virginia got in touch with me the other day, and they're now going to be using TAG West Virginia for their social media and adolescent health promotion. I really like to thank our speakers a final time, and their contact information we have put up on this slide, so you can get out your phones and take pictures, and also you can get in touch with the Office of Adolescent Health. That's our website. You can email the TAG team at hhs.gov, and we will get back to you. And please follow us on social media at teenhealthgov, and use that hashtag, TAG42Mil. I appreciate your attention, and hopefully we're all inspired, and especially about engaging young people and the roles that they can play to improve their own health and public health. Thank you.